It was too late for me to claim that I didn't know the strange caped man, so I took the instrument and strapped it on. As I stood there feeling the stares of the audience, a surge of nervousness and insecurity swept over me. I didn't know what to do. I'd played that song hundreds of times before, but for some reason, that night, I was at a loss for notes. Michael looked back at me. I was already sweating. How was I going to measure up to the little kid that had been playing all night? I looked at Sam. He flashed a reassuring smile. Oh, yeah, smile, I remembered. With four clicks of the drumsticks and no more time to think, the song began. Sans bass. I was so wrapped up in my anxiety that I forgot to come in. Michael quickly came to my rescue.
Hold on, hold on. I'm about to drive this thing, but I forgot to fasten my seatbelt.
As he pantomimed sitting in a car and fastening his belt, he turned around and winked at me.
Just make it groove.
We got off to a good start. I'd never heard Michael sing before. He was incredible. He was a cross between Otis Redding, James Brown, and Bob Dylan, if such a thing were possible. Between running through the audience, dancing, and doing the splits, his pitch never seemed to falter. He also made it a point to perform for the people looking in through the window.
You better slow it, slow it, slow it down. Oh, you're gonna get me down.
How he maneuvered his way around the small stage without breaking something or hurting himself was even more amazing. After singing a few verses and choruses, Michael pointed at the guitarist, who proceeded to play the most amazing guitar solo I'd ever heard. His guitar screamed and squealed in ways that made the instrument seem alive. Once he was done, the sax player took his turn. Much of his solo was accomplished while playing two saxophones at once. The keyboard player used a device that had a plastic tube attached. He held the end of the tube in his mouth, which made his keyboard sound like if it was speaking words. It was incredible. I never witnessed a group of musicians who possessed that much ability. The solos were passed around to each musician until I noticed that it was now being passed to me. I was so wrapped up in each of the previous solos that I neglected to realize it would eventually be my turn. That actually was to my advantage. If I had been thinking about a solo, I would have spent the whole song being nervous rather than enjoying myself. But now, my nerves were like a bomb about to go off. I could feel them taking over my whole body. Michael looked at me and took a deep breath. I took the hint and did the same. Everyone stopped playing except for the drummer and me. I've always hated when that happens. All the other soloists get to play with the whole band while the bass player has to play with just the drummer. Well, he wasn't just a drummer. Playing with that guy was like lounging on a large, plush sofa. He was sitting behind the drums looking at me, waiting for me to begin. The groove that he laid down was so solid that it actually calmed me down a bit more, but I still didn't know what to play. All I knew was that I was not going to let an 11-year-old kid get the best of me, at least not in public. I decided to play it all. I started my solo with a flash, and the more I played, the more insecure I felt. I closed my eyes and tried to get deeper into the music. Everyone else had taken a lengthy solo, so I decided to take my time, saying everything I wanted to say. I used all of my techniques and played every note that I knew. Opening my eyes, I looked at Sam. He was smiling. Remembering my lesson with him, I started smiling too. It worked a little. Michael was sitting next to him, whispering something into his ear. I knew they were talking about me. Trying not to let it get to me, I closed my eyes again. That night, even though I was nervous, I played what I thought was one of my better solos. When I finished, the crowd went wild. I felt so good that I couldn't keep myself from smiling. I tried to appear cool by stepping back and leaning against the speaker as if it was an everyday occurrence. I looked at the drummer, waiting to see how he was going to follow me. Looking calm and cool, he just sat there, chewing bubble gum, with his head bobbing up and down. He didn't appear concerned with me at all. The groove he was laying down was the heaviest and most solid I'd ever heard. Basically, He kept doing what he'd been doing the whole song. After about 8 measures or so of intense grooving, he stopped playing. He just completely stopped. His head was still bobbing up and down with the groove. I looked at Michael and Sam. Their heads, along with every head in the audience, were bobbing up and down. I was amazed that even though no one was playing the drums, or any other instruments for that matter, the groove was still there. The whole room could feel it. It was as solid as it had been all along. The fact that he'd laid down such a strong groove for so long allowed us all to continue feeling it. After about 4 measures, he hit the splash cymbal 1 time. He then proceeded to sit there in silence, bobbing his head and chewing his gum for another 4 measures. After that, he was done. That was his solo. He simply returned to playing the same groove he'd been playing before. It was remarkable. I was blown away. It was the most amazing solo I could remember hearing ever. Even the thought of approaching a solo that way was pure genius. His solo said more than the rest of ours combined, and he did it by saying nothing. I could hear Isis's voice ringing in my head, repeating the number 0 over and over. I was finally starting to understand that principle a little bit more. The drummer had created space in a way that allowed the few beats he did play a chance to really be heard. He did it in a way that forced us, the listeners, to hear them. And we heard them completely. It allowed us to appreciate each drum beat wholly. I was getting it, and it excited me. This drummer is a genius. I knew I had more to learn about using space, and I looked forward to finishing the song so I could talk to Michael about it. When it was over, we shook hands with the band members, and I gladly handed the bass back to Sam. I was eager to get off the stage so I could ask Michael what had happened. I wanted to know exactly how the drummer had done what he'd done. I understood it on a surface level, but I knew there was something deeper going on. Something I was missing. Back at the table, Michael told me to keep listening. He said that I could ask the drummer myself after the gig was over. So that's exactly what I did. At the end of the night, after all the equipment was packed away, Michael and I sat with the drummer and talked for a while. Sam couldn't stick around because he had school the next morning. There were many things I wanted to know about space and how to use it. I asked the drummer if he would talk about it for a few minutes before he left.
Michael should be talking instead of me. He showed me the way into this world. I just explored it and learned how to use it in my own way.
Well, you sure are doing a great job. What you did tonight was unbelievable.
Thank you,
was his modest response. Can you help me understand space the way that you do?
Start by first understanding rests. Rest is related to space, but not as broad. Your solo tonight was really good, but you rest at the end of almost every phrase. You were not in the right space. You played as if you had something to prove. That caused you to rush. You were so anxious to play the next group of notes that you neglected to play the rest. You didn't give the notes their full life, their full amount of air. In simpler terms, you played the notes, but not the rests. If you don't play the rests, give them the same attention that you give the notes, you'll rush. Simple as that.
I never thought about that.
I could tell. Most people don't.
He was being completely frank with me, but I didn't mind.
When we first take lessons as kids, we learn how to read music and we learn what rests are, but we rarely learn how to really play them. And we are never taught how to use them. We know how to use notes to produce desired results, but we are never taught how to use rest that way. If we pay attention to the rest and really learn how to use them, we find that they can speak louder and deeper than notes.
Louder and deeper than notes. What does that mean?
If you're performing for a noisy audience and you want them to stop talking and start listening to you, what do you do?
Play louder, I guess.
Wouldn't that just make them talk louder?
I guess it would. Maybe I should play quieter to make them listen.
Right, or stop playing altogether. Think about it. A baby will sleep through any noise that's going on as long as it is constant. But if the noise stops, the baby will wake up. Why? because he's been deeply touched by loud silence.
He made a light tapping gesture on the table. Oh, yeah, I said, not realizing how I could have forgotten. I saw Michael stop a guy from talking just by using dynamics, and that guy was all the way across the room. The drummer smiled at Michael and remarked,
Still doing tricks, huh, Michael?
I always did love a good parlor trick.
Michael could stop a guy in Cincinnati from talking if he wanted to. Listen to all the background noise that's going on right now.
He sat back, so I did the same. I could hear the bartenders and waitresses as they chatted and closed up for the evening. There was music playing over the sound system that I hadn't paid attention to until that moment, as well as the sounds of cars and people outside. I hadn't realized it before, but all of the noises were causing us to speak louder.
What would happen if all the noises suddenly stopped?
I thought about it for a moment before he answered for me.
You would become dead silent. Your ears would perk up and you would listen intently in the direction the silence came from. You'd be searching for a cause and your awareness would reach out to the next available sound that stood out. Now, what you have to do is learn how to create the same effect. When you're playing to an inattentive audience, you and your bandmates are the background noise. Something must change before you can cause the audience to listen. They may decide on their own to start listening, or you can decide for them. You can make them listen without their even knowing it. The best way to do that is through dynamics, or even better, through space. Create silence and let the next sound that speaks to them be your bass. If done well, they'll listen to you for the rest of the night. That's all I did for my solo.
You used space, and you really used it well. He pointed a skinny index finger at me and responded in a serious tone.
Right, and as you noticed, no one said a word. They were sitting on the edge of their seats, waiting to hear what I was going to do next. I had them in the palm of my hand, and at that point, I could have done anything with them, but I decided to let them off easy. How did I do it? By playing nothing.
He sat back, smiled, and continued chewing his gum. That was remarkable to me. I couldn't wait to learn how to use space in that way. Even though everything he said made complete sense, I didn't know where to start. He sat up quickly and replied to my thoughts.
Start with rest. Learn how to make a rest speak louder than a note. Play a musical line and then start leaving notes out, putting the emphasis on the rest. You should end up playing more rest than notes. Have you talked to him about projecting his intentions?
He asked, looking at Michael.
Yes.
The drummer scooted his chair closer to mine. Leaning over, he put his mouth to my ear and whispered.
Create space in the appropriate way, then fill the space with a solid emotion. You won't have to project it nowhere. The space you created will draw the listener right into it. And then...
He scooted his chair away and began to stand up.
Aw, man, that's the good stuff. Learn how to make that work and you are on your way.
With that comment, he was on his way. As he turned to leave, I thanked him for the lesson and told him that I hoped to play with him again.
Oh, you will.
He replied as if he knew something I didn't.
Life is a lot like music. You've got to put some rest in there. And right now, I've got to go get mine. Later, I'll catch you another time.
Before he walked out the door, he turned to take one last glance at a beautiful waitress walking by.
Just admiring God's work.
I watched in silence as he made his way to his car. Michael sat there smiling the whole time. He seemed to enjoy watching my mind get blown by someone other than himself. He's incredible.
He is also credible.
I think he enjoyed playing with my mind as much as you do.
Most people work with their minds when playing with them can be much more effective.
Did you teach him all that stuff?
What I showed him is not as important as whether you learned anything tonight or not. Did you learn?
But of course.
Good. because we must leave now. We have a meeting with a frog.
Measure 11. Listening.
We think that music stops at the ears. That is a mistake. Vibrations can be felt in all places and at all times, even with the eyes.
We drove for a few miles to a place called Radnor Lake. Radnor, as it's called by the locals, is one of Tennessee's most beautiful state parks. Located near the Green Hills section of Nashville, Radnor is home to an abundant variety of wildflowers, birds, reptiles, and mammals. The 85-acre lake attracts naturalists, bird watchers, and hikers from all around. Its trails, which traverse some of Tennessee's highest hills, along with the lake, make it a popular place to visit all year round. It's a favorite site of mine, and a place I'd been to many times before, but only during the day. I'd never been there after dark. We parked at a nearby store and walked down a darkened street which led to the park entrance. It must have been cloudy because no moon or stars were visible. That, coupled with the fact that there were no street lights, made the walk seem as dark as if we'd had our eyes closed. The distant sounds of the forest added to the eeriness of the morning. Michael walked slowly in silence, often pausing as if he were listening for something.
"This way,"
he said. He led me to a bench on the far end of the lake.
"Listen,"
he whispered as he quietly sat down. We sat in silence for a time, listening to the chorus of crickets, frogs, and other insects that filled the air. The sounds were mesmerizing and lulled me into a trance until Michael spoke.
"Pay attention to how the animals are listening to each other."
I hadn't noticed it before, but the animals did seem to be listening to each other. It sounded like the different species were taking turns singing. When the animals did speak on top of each other, they did so in a different register. It was like listening to a well-orchestrated masterpiece. I was enjoying the music until an airplane flew overhead, causing all the animals to become silent. After the sound of the plane faded, the animals attempted to restart their chorus. It took a while for them to get back in sync, as if each musician wasn't quite sure when to come back in.
"There is a species of frog that uses their unison chorus for survival. When they speak together, they sound like a much larger animal. Unnatural sounds, like that airplane, break up their unity, and when they try to join back in one by one, they are picked off and eaten by predators. Because of that, some species of frogs are becoming extinct. It goes unnoticed by most people. We have forgotten, as a species, how to listen."
I'd never thought about the possibility of noise pollution leading to the extinction of animals. I knew how awful certain noises made me feel, so it was not too far-fetched for me to believe that these noises could severely affect other animals, too. I sat in a melancholy trance thinking about it, that is, until Michael started making low guttural sounds. I didn't know what he was trying to do. He kept it up for about 15 minutes, taking short pauses and turning his head as if to listen in all directions. All of a sudden, I felt something land on my left leg. Then it jumped to my right leg. It startled me. Inside my body, I was screaming. Outside, I was frozen and silent. I would have knocked it into the water if Michael hadn't picked it up first. I tried to focus my eyes in the dark. I couldn't tell what it was until I heard it make the same sound Michael had been making. It was a frog, a rather large frog. Michael turned the frog upside down and started rubbing its belly.
"All animals like to be petted. This is Betty. She is a friend of mine. Her brother Jeremiah died recently."
"Jeremiah was a bullfrog?"
"Yes, he was a good friend of mine."
I started to laugh, but then realized that he'd said that Jeremiah had died. Just in case he was serious, I acted sad. "How did he die?"
"Pollution. This area cannot sustain the number of frogs that it once could."
"What do you mean? I come here all the time. This lake is well taken care of. The rangers make sure that nothing is dumped into it."
"Noise pollution. Or you can call it vibration pollution. Either way, it is caused mostly by the airplanes and the nearby construction. The Friends of Radnor Lake Foundation has tried for years to get the air traffic rerouted so that the planes don't fly directly over the park. They have tried, but have not succeeded. Besides adding noise, the planes actually change the vibration of the park. That is not good for the animals or the visitors. Environmentalists know that the planes aren't good, but they do not fully understand why.
Did Betty tell you that? I asked, feigning seriousness.
No, I could sense it. That is why I come here almost every night and sing to the animals. It helps reset the vibrations. The frogs seem to enjoy it the most.
You sing to them? I asked, no longer hiding my disbelief. And you're trying to get me to believe that they actually listen?
I'm not trying to get you to believe anything. I'm just telling you what I do.
I don't believe you. You're a remarkable man and everything. I'll give you that much. I'll even go so far as to say that I believe you're crazy enough to come here every night and sing to frogs. But you can't expect me to believe that they actually listen to you.
Oh, they listen all right. Better than most humans do. Most humans can't listen past their limited intelligence. The more they think they know, the less they honestly hear. Humans only hear what they want to hear. Play a record for a musician, and before he can listen to it, he has to know who it is. And once he knows, he decides what it sounds like before he ever hears it, solely based on what he thinks he knows about the performer. What difference does it make who it is? What does it sound like, and how does it make you feel? That is what is important. You could learn a thing or two from these animals. They know how to listen. Some of them don't even have ears. They can't hear at all, but they can feel. So with my voice and my whole being, I create healing vibrations that combat the damaging vibrations in the air. The animals allow these vibrations to penetrate their whole bodies, the vibrations acting somewhat like vitamins. That is the best way to listen. Allow your whole body to pick up the vibrations, using the whole body as an eardrum.
I'll have to work on listening like that, I noted, trying to calm myself down. Michael spoke in a tone that seemed to match the peaceful place we were in. I, on the other hand, was speaking through emotion alone, which made it hard to articulate my true feelings. Also, the dynamic of my voice was way too loud for the quiet space we were in, causing my rhythm to differ from that of the woods. Maybe a different technique would help. Taking a deep breath, I tried to relax before I spoke my next phrase. Although slow, I was learning. That's an interesting thought, I said, proud of my composure.
Yes, but not a foreign one.
But you're still pulling my leg, right? The animals don't really listen to you, do they?
You know that plants respond to music, don't you?
Yes, I've heard of that before.
Do plants have ears?
Well, no, I guess not.
Music, like all things, is vibration. That is all. Because we humans can hear music with our ears, we get stuck on the idea that that's all there is to it. Most of us wouldn't even consider the thought of seeing music or of hearing a flower. What we hear, we do not see, and what we see, we do not hear. We think that music stops at the ears. That is a mistake. Vibrations can be felt in all places and at all times, even with the eyes. Music can be seen if your awareness is broad enough.
Years earlier, while living in Virginia, I played a few shows at a school for the deaf and blind. It always surprised me to watch the deaf kids dance. They could really feel the music. Sometimes we would aim our speakers at the floor to help them feel the music even more. Some of the blind kids even claimed to be able to see the music. I knew that they were responding to the vibrations of our music, but I don't think I'd thought about it since then. Although I couldn't imagine seeing music or hearing a flower, what Michael was telling me made a lot of sense, but I didn't like it. I wasn't going to continue letting him suck me in with his sense-making nonsense. He was talking about singing to frogs. Now that's crazy talk in my book. Feeling my composure backslide, I started to respond, but he beat me to the punch.
Vibrations are penetrating, like ripples in the water. They bounce off you and they go right through you. An important thing to remember is that vibrations never stop vibrating. Think about that. Vibrations may change, but they never stop. That means that we should pay attention to the vibrations we're putting out there.
I wasn't buying it. At least I wasn't allowing myself to buy it, and I was ready to let Michael know it.
Do you charge the animals admission?
I smirked.
They pay me in their own way.
Stop it, Michael. Just stop it. I've heard enough. You bring me out here at, I don't even know what time it is, and spoon-feed me this nonsense? Do you really expect me to... I was enjoying creating my own noise pollution when all of a sudden I was stopped mid-sentence by a gentle sound. Michael started singing. There were no words, but the most beautiful sounds filled the air. It didn't even sound like it was coming from his mouth. The music was just in the air. I don't have the words to explain what I was hearing. I wish I did. It was angelic. It was, well, angelic is the best I can do. I closed my eyes and let the music envelop me. It was easy to do. It was the first time I'd ever felt music with my whole body. I thought I'd done it before when I'd heard music that made me get up and dance, but even then I was only hearing through my ears. At that moment in the woods, I was hearing with my whole body, and the music was causing my whole body to tingle. It was a pleasant feeling. I remembered my earlier lessons dealing with the tingle. I allowed the feeling to permeate my whole being. It felt so wonderful that I wanted to share it. Focusing on the tingle, I allowed it to travel outside my body. I pushed it out as before, but this time I expanded with it, keeping myself attached to it. It's hard to explain, but I know what I did. After a few moments, I felt something wet and cold touch my hand. I opened my eyes and saw a deer standing right in front of me, her nose touching my open palm. Even though I should have been shocked, the feeling was natural and wonderful. I reached out and touched her on the head just to make sure she was real. I wonder if I'll be able to do this again while listening to ordinary music, I pondered.
Already on to the next experience, I see.
I didn't know where those words were coming from. It felt as if someone was sending their thoughts to me. Then I realized that they seemed to be coming from the deer. I wasn't sure, but as soon as I looked her in the eyes, more words entered my mind.
All experiences, as well as all music, are ordinary. It is up to you to add the extra quality that makes something extraordinary. But, like most humans, you risk missing much of the present experience by putting part of yourself in future or past experiences. I highly recommend you spend this moment in the now so that you and the experience can share with each other all that you have to offer.
Her voice was tender and sweet. I'd never been given advice by a deer, so I decided to take it. I closed my eyes again, allowing myself to be fully in the moment. It felt bizarre being in such a trance while at the same time being so aware. Taking hold of my awareness, I expanded myself even more until I could sense the plants and trees. I got the feeling that they too were listening to the music. I wondered if my aura could get poison ivy. A strange thought, I know, but it went along with the strange experience I was having. After relishing the music for a while, I opened my eyes and thought it was daytime. That was my first impression because everything was so bright. But then I noticed that the light I saw was a glow. I could see a bright glow surrounding everything, and I was part of it. I looked at Michael. He was still sitting there with his eyes closed, singing. I could see the music coming from him. It appeared to be mostly emanating from his mouth, but I noticed that it was also coming from his whole body, while at the same time entering his whole body. The music was connected to everything, and everything was connected to the music, including me. I could see vibrations bouncing off and passing through everything, allowing me to know that all things were alive and connected. I knew where all the animals were. I didn't have to look. I just knew. I've never felt that way before or since. It's hard to put into words, but I felt like I cared so much about all things that I didn't care. I closed my eyes and sat inside the music. I listened to all the sounds around me and noticed how they fit in. Like different instruments in a band, each sound served a purpose. Each animal made a sound that somehow supported the other sounds while leaving enough space for all to participate. The music sounded and felt so wonderful. I knew that the best thing I could offer was silence, so I sat quietly. As I sat there listening, the orchestra grew stronger. It seemed as if more and more animals and insects were participating. I may have been the only animal in the forest not making a sound, but I knew that I was not the only animal listening. All the animals had to be listening in order to make a collective sound as beautiful as what I was experiencing. More than ever, I understood the power of listening, just listening. I wondered what music would be like if musicians listened like that.
Only through the power of listening can you truly know anything.
I didn't know where the thought had come from. It felt as if it came from the music, as if the music were speaking directly to me. At that moment, I understood the connection between listening and feeling. I knew that they were the key to understanding everything, especially music. I'd been calling myself a musician for years, but at that moment, sitting in the woods, I was sure that the animals knew more about music than I did. For a while, I'd forgotten that the core of the music was coming from Michael. Even though his voice clearly provided the bass line of the sound, it was in no way more important than any other voice. Months later, while playing with the band, I thought about my experience at the lake. I was able to use it to remind myself how to listen and fit in with other musicians. My newfound listening skill was one most other musicians neglected. It wasn't that they couldn't listen as well as I could, they just didn't. I noticed that most musicians seemed to reserve their ears for themselves rather than open up their ears to the rest of the band. I found that when I listened to the other musicians more than I listened to myself, I played better. I realized that listening is a choice. The same is true in conversation. When I listen to other people more than to myself, I know how to respond and support them in a better way. It also helps me know when to remain quiet. Listening with my whole body became a huge benefit at my gigs. The few times I've tried to explain this concept to someone, it proved to be too much of a struggle. Most people can't understand. They approach it as a hypothetical concept, not as a reality. I will have to bring my musician friends into the woods and let them figure it out themselves, I guess. At the lake, I could feel the presence of all the animals around me. I opened my eyes again, and to my surprise, there were about 50 animals of all sizes, not counting the frogs and other small rodents sitting or standing around us. There were deer, coyote, fox, bobcats, rabbits, raccoons, opossums, squirrels, beavers, birds, bats, snakes, otters, minks, mice, and more, all coexisting. Some of them were in the trees, and some were in the water. Michael sang for a few more minutes before slowly fading into silence. Soon after, most of the other animals also became quiet while the insects continued their chorus. I sat there in awe, realizing I might never hear anything like it again. Michael reached over and grabbed a snake that was curled up asleep in my lap. I hadn't noticed it was there. I was so shocked at the sight of all the other animals that I didn't have time to be afraid of the snake that was now crawling down Michael's arm to the ground. As the animals calmly went their separate ways, Betty hopped up and again perched on my left leg. Thinking about the snake, I commented, "You almost joined your brother." I reached down and took my turn petting her belly. She seemed to enjoy it. We sat there for a while as Michael walked around petting the remaining animals. They came up to him wanting to get closer to the vibrations I could still see emanating from his body. It made me understand the effect some pop stars have on their fans. Do the fans just want to touch them, or do they unconsciously want to connect with their vibrations? The whole experience seems surreal, but it was real. Real vibrations, real energy, real music. And I could feel it. I could see it. I could hear it.
"Now,"
Michael whispered,
"that is how you listen to music."
I don't know how much time had passed, but by the time we reached the car, the sun was almost up. I sat in the driver's seat with my head against the steering wheel. What was that, Michael?
Don't try. You can't fit it into words.
We drove home in silence. The Last Measure, The Dream.
In all your musical years, when have you ever truthfully said thank you to your bass guitar?
I was sitting there practicing on my couch. The next thing I remember, I was walking down a crowded street pushing a shopping cart. I don't recall whether it was day or night. I don't even recall being able to see myself, but I know that I was dressed in rags, as if I were a bag lady collecting my prized possessions and pushing them around in a cart. The main difference was this. I was not collecting physical things. I was collecting thoughts. I could hear people's thoughts, and because there were so many, I could not keep up. I couldn't process them, so I carried them in my overflowing cart. All the people on the street made fun of me and called me names. The thoughts they projected were even worse. They didn't know I could hear them. I thought about all the so-called crazy people I'd ever seen walking the streets. Maybe they weren't all crazy. Maybe their minds were just open, too open for their own good. Maybe they just didn't know how to process all the information they were receiving. At that moment, I made a vow not only to change my views about crazy people, but to listen to them as well. It was amazing to think about the possibilities of all that could be learned. The possibility of being able to help them was also interesting to me. Maybe I could somehow help them gain control of the information overload. It was that thought that caused me to realize I was living a duality. I was simultaneously in two different places. I was the bag lady pushing the cart of thoughts, and I was also somewhere else, watching and thinking about it all. I tried to see if I could get a handle on some of the thoughts that were coming in. Could I help that person, me, control and maybe organize some of the thoughts that were overwhelming me? I tried to focus on some of the thoughts. The energy in my head and in the cart was swirling, blending together. It was a very confusing mix of information, but there was one force that seemed to be prevailing. I can't explain what it looked like or how I could distinguish it from the others, but I could feel that particular energy was different. I felt it was beckoning to me, so I reached out and tried to grab it. It grabbed me instead. It was a gentle tug to which I immediately surrendered. I found myself in another place, or more accurately, another space. I can't exactly call it a room because there were no walls, floor, or ceiling. Colors enveloped me, and looking back on it, I realized the colors were constantly changing. I was surrounded by an energy that I somehow sensed was alive. So I decided to speak to it. "Who are you?"
"I am music."
Her voice was sweet, the type that you can melt right into. I don't know why I attached a female gender to it. Maybe it was because of the gentle nature I felt emanating from her. "Music? I never realized you were alive."
"I know. You have chosen not to realize, and that is why your musical life has never been alive. It is also why mine is fading."
"What do you mean by that?"
"Your approach toward me has been as if I'm not real, like a dream. You feel that I do not exist until you create me, and even then you feel I am a creation that is separate from you. Most musicians in your town feel as you do. Because of that, I am dying and in need of your help.
I could tell that she was not well, but I hadn't focused on that thought because I hadn't realized music was alive until then. I could tell there was a difference in the way my new friends spoke about music. Now I knew why. Music is alive and real. But how could she be sick? And why was she asking for my help? How can I help you?
When you were young, you weren't afraid to dream. And it was these dreams that birthed your reality. You knew that I was alive and inside you. You could feel our union and would express it any time and in any way you chose. As you grew older, you yearned to know more about me. But through lessons and books, you abandoned your own experience for someone else's. The more you learned, the less you felt. The more you opened your eyes, the less you dreamed. The more you practiced, the less you prayed, causing you to quickly forget about me. There is no one to blame for this. Your parents and your teachers did what they thought was best for you. But it was that way of learning that diminished a lot of your natural gifts.
What were my natural gifts?
Knowing has always been one of your best attributes, but it is one that you are now afraid to use. You do not trust yourself the way you once did. When you were a child, you knew what you knew and didn't question what you knew. There was no need for others' justification or approval. Your experience, coupled with what you felt, was your truth. If you felt me inside you, you would sing, play, or dance. You did not need an outside reason for doing it. You did not need instructions on how to do it. You did not even need an instrument. And you surely didn't care what anyone else thought if he or she saw or heard you doing it. It was beautiful. Everyone who was near you would be pulled into our world. And for a little while, they too would feel that connection with me. They would feel the realness of music.
I could remember doing that as a child. I would get a feeling and without thinking, just let it out. I'd start singing at the top of my lungs or sometimes quietly to myself. I'd dance to a tune playing in my head or to the one floating through the trees. My parents always said that I'd drum on everything I could and that I'd make instruments out of anything that was around. I don't know when or how I lost the gift, but music was right. I had lost it. How can I regain these natural gifts?
You must recognize them. You have never completely lost anything. You have just buried these gifts way down deep inside you. You must recognize them and bring them back to the forefront of your being before I will become enjoyable to you again. Music lessons were not enjoyable to you as a child because you could already play. Your music teacher forced you to play scales, fingerings, and rudiments, but did not allow you to freely play. And that, you felt, held you back. Therefore, you did not enjoy or benefit from those lessons. You approached each lesson with a sense of dread. Even now, you feel that way about practicing. You don't want to practice, you just want to play. So if you feel that practice is necessary, it would benefit you to figure out how to practice while you play so that you can get the best out of both worlds. You have not been smart enough to figure that out yet. But know this, as your days approach their final numbers, you will not spend one moment wondering whether you practice your bass enough.
Thinking about my final days was a bit disturbing, but I knew that what she said was true. I would never again allow myself to waste precious time worrying about something as trivial as practicing. Even though I understood the benefits, I knew that practicing never took me as far as when I would allow myself to completely let go while playing music. I loved that feeling, but it only happened on rare occasions. How could I make it a frequent occurrence? Music responded to my thoughts.
In your mind, music is not a part of who you are. It is something you have to go somewhere else to do. Whether it is the woodshed or the nightclub, you feel that you must go to that place to find me. You do not carry me inside you at all times the way you once did. Actually, there are few of you who do anymore. This lack of union is causing me to die.
I will work on it, I promise.
It does not take work. It takes remembering, enjoying, rejoicing, recognizing, playing, and knowing. It should be easy. When you were a child, it did not feel like work, and it should not feel like work now. If it does, you know you are going about it the wrong way. At that moment, take a step back and go inside. Remember what I truly feel like. Then you will know where to be and what to do next. Regain your knowing of me. Books and teachers can be of assistance, but you should never let them take the place of what you feel and what you know within yourself. Only use these outside aids as tools to confirm, challenge, or show you more about what you know and feel inside. That is all. Never let them take the place of your natural gifts.
What she was saying was true, and I knew it. There was a time when our connection was so natural that I didn't have to think about it. I knew that was one of the gifts she was talking about.
Give me 5 words to describe me,
I felt her say. As strange as it was, having a conversation with music herself, I accepted it completely. And now she was asking me to describe her. Feeling her energy all around me, it was an easy task. Love, emotion, beauty, expression, harmony, communication, spiritual, natural, vibrations, God. I know I gave you more than 5, but I feel like I could go on forever.
Yes, you could go on forever, and all of your words would be wonderful. The words you gave are beautiful ones that describe me perfectly. That should remind you that you do know who I am. Why is it then that when it is time for you to pay, you choose to forget?
I didn't know what to think or say.
Notice that you didn't choose to use words such as technique, scales, modes, theory, notes, tapping, thumbing, major, minor, or key signatures. You didn't even use the words bass or guitar. But those are the words you choose to think about when it's time for you to play. Inside, you know that that's not who I really am. If all your attention is directed toward those words, when will you ever get to play music? I suggest you take a good look at the wonderful words you gave and learn how to play them. If that is what I am to you, that is what you should be playing. You have spent years learning how to play the bass, so long that you have forgotten that it is music you should be playing. The bass is just a tool to help you express yourself through me. Why then, after all these years, do you continue to focus on the tool? You have forgotten. I patiently await your return.
Her vibrations pierced my flesh in a way that made me feel both guilty and refreshed. I knew she wasn't judging me, just telling the truth. The fact that she spoke through energy, not words, caused me to hear her with my whole body. And these vibrations were exactly what I needed. They seemed to touch my very soul.
If you wanted to know more about your mother, would you get a book and read about her? Would you find a teacher to teach you about her? A book might help you to find your mother, but once you did, would you worship the book? Would you even need the book anymore? Or would you go directly to your mother and talk to her, listen to her, experience her, and unite with her? You and I both know the answer to those questions. Experiencing your mother directly would be the absolute best way for you to learn about her. Pertaining to music, most people choose the first 2 methods because that is all they know. They don't realize they can do the latter. They talk about me as if they know me. They write books about me. They open schools and teach about me. They create whole departments and universities named after me. They even create and use numerous methods to play me, only to argue about which ones are best. And most of the time, it is only the superficial me they talk about, not the real me they once knew in their hearts. Can you believe they've actually turned me into a business?
I could feel her power as she spoke. But then, as I continued to listen, her voice became so enchanting that it gave me goosebumps. Goosebumps never lie, my mom always told me.
What people don't do anymore is talk to me. Simply and honestly, talk to me. the few who do don't expect me to answer. My relationship with computers is about to become more intimate than it is with humans. People refuse to feel me. I reach out to them, but they retract their hands. That saddens me deeply. I tell you, it is a lonely world I live in. All I ask is to be felt. I reached out to you, and you took my hand. That makes me happy. You give me hope.
I felt sad for her. I could feel all her emotions seeping into me. It made me cry. I made a silent vow to remember that feeling and use it to help me change my ways. I realized once again that music is real, alive, and approachable. I could talk with her, sit with her, embrace her, laugh and cry with her. I also knew that I didn't have to try to create her anymore. She already exists. All I have to do is come to this place and music will be waiting, complete, whole, and alive. I wanted to help others know what I knew. I wanted others to feel what I felt. I wanted to help others remember their union with music in a real way. I would do my best to help keep her alive. I would no longer be a part of the death of music.
Thank you, I cried. Thank you so much. You've helped me understand the responsibility, honor, and joy of being a musician.
You are quite welcome, but you should also thank your bass. The instrument you have chosen helped you come to me on a daily basis. In all your musical years, when have you ever truthfully said thank you to your bass guitar?
The question stunned me. There was nothing I could say. She paused, allowing me time to digest her words before she continued.
Do that honestly and frequently, and notice what happens. All the elements that make up your instrument are alive. Your recognition and appreciation of them may change the way you respond to each other.
Thank my bass. It was a profound concept, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. I found it hard to believe that I'd never done it before. I never even thought about it. After all the years of playing the instrument, I never once said thank you to it. I knew that some things in my life would have to change.
Remember, play me all you want, but you must know this. It is only when you allow me to play you that you will know me completely, because then we will be one and the same.
Allow music to play me? That was another new concept that made complete sense. I didn't know why I hadn't thought of it before. I realized for the first time that my relationship with music had always been one-sided. I'd never really listened to her. That kind of relationship never worked.
Only through the power of listening can you truly know anything,
she told me. Those words continue to stick with me. Closing my eyes, I allowed her to take control. It caused a shift in my energy, and for the first time, I could sense my body. Something was growing inside me. It felt as if my whole body was vibrating with intense speed. I also noticed that I was glowing with vibrant colors, the same colors that music was emanating. Music and I were becoming one. As good as it felt, I didn't trust myself to let go completely. I was still holding on to something.
Relax. Let go. What are you holding on to?
As soon as that thought entered my mind, I had a quick glimpse of myself as the bag lady pushing the cart. I fought hard to hold on to the feeling of light, the feeling of union, the feeling of music. I was losing it. Help me. What should I do?
There are no shoulds or shouldn'ts. There are only choices. What you choose to do next is up to you. No one can tell you what that is. You have been shown all you need to know.
I recognize the voice. I opened my tear-filled eyes to see Michael standing in front of me in the exact place he'd stood when he first appeared in my house. Was it he or was it music who'd been talking to me just moments ago? For the first time since I'd met him, Michael was dressed in ordinary clothing. He wore black slacks, a button-down white shirt, and a tie. Even his shoes were normal, and there was no sign of his skateboard. I couldn't believe it. I was confused. "I must be dreaming," I said out loud. Sitting up to get a better look, I shook my head and wiped the tears from my eyes. As they cleared, a change took place. Michael now appeared to be wearing the blue NASA-style jumpsuit I'd originally seen him in. In one hand was his motorcycle helmet. His skateboard was in the other. "Michael," was all I could think to say. Even though he now looked like himself, I was confused even more.
Dress and act ordinary, and you produce ordinary students.
With a quick smile and a wink of his eye, he was gone. Just gone. I didn't understand. I shook my head once more to see if it would make him reappear. It didn't. I couldn't figure out how to feel or what to think. The only thing I did know was that it would be the last time I would see him. I fell back on the couch, staring into space, clutching my bass in my lap. I glanced across the room and saw a skateboard on the floor. I sat up. "Michael's," I thought, or, wait a minute, is it mine? I used to own one. I reclined once again. I couldn't begin to figure it out. My mind was racing and I started to feel dizzy. I searched for it, but the line that separated asleep from awake was nowhere to be found, and the line that kept me sane was fading fast. I was losing it, and I knew it. I was scared.
Pull yourself together. Don't get trapped by your mind.
Wait a minute. I remember those words. They were Michael's, or were they mine? Wake up. Go to sleep. Do something. Just don't lose it, I uttered out loud. Michael warned me about this. Yes, Michael, right. Think. What else did Michael say?
You have been shown all you need to know.
Who said that? What did it mean? All I need to know to do what? I still had no gigs, no money, and if I didn't soon pay my rent, I'd have no place to live. My impending situation caused reality to creep in. That was a feeling I could handle. As if drowning in the sea, I grasped for that piece of reality like a life preserver. I missed. Instead, I was drowning in the depths of my mind. I tried hard to make sense out of any of it, but I couldn't even get myself off the couch. It was hard to believe that just a few moments earlier I was filled with emotion and tears, and now I was scared and depressed. I tried to go back to sleep, but couldn't. Maybe I am asleep. Wait a minute. Have I been asleep all along? I just sat down to practice, right? I shook my head again and struggled to get up. In the process, I accidentally plucked a string on my bass guitar. With the bass lying in my lap, the sound reverberated through my body, triggering a familiar feeling. I was starting to regain some composure. I thought about music. The thought of her caused me to relax a bit more. I focused harder, trying to see if I could reclaim more of my mind. It worked. I could remember part of my vision and vow to help keep her alive, but I couldn't remember how I was supposed to do it. "Remember, you can do it," I told myself. "Try harder." I lay there thinking hard enough to make my head hurt when I heard Michael's voice one more time.
"Try easy, my friend. Try easy."
Coda, back to the beginning.
What is more dangerous to a person, success or failure?
Life has a way of repeating itself. It also seems to go by much faster as one gets older. It's been nearly 5 years since I pushed that shopping cart, and even though I can sometimes hear his voice in my head and can still recall every experience like it happened yesterday, I haven't seen Michael since that day. Well, actually, I'm not so sure about that. Last summer, I was invited to play a benefit concert at Carnegie Hall in New York City, which was a thrill to say the least. While playing, I thought I saw a familiar face sitting in the balcony. I felt